Welcome to the Forensic News Podcast. I'm Scott Stedman, the founder and lead investigative journalist at Forensic News. A big thank you to all of our Tier 5 Patreon subscribers, Craig Pierce, Andre Dunka, Angela Jackson, Zach Z-Score Kaminsky, William Healy, Jason Zimmerman, Mark Alfano, Kevin Sherwood, Phil Holting, Michael Murphy, Bernie DeWizard, Drew Hart. Thank you all for helping keep the lights on at Forensic News. You can support us at patreon.com/forensicnews or by visiting our website, forensicnews.net, and click on the Support Our Work link on the menu. So before we jump into the actual content of the latest Forensic News investigation into Rudy Giuliani, I wanted to give a little bit of a background kind of how the cake is made look into this story. I think it's kind of an interesting look into how everyday open source intelligence skills can benefit you. Obviously, for me as a journalist, I use those kind of skills every day, but they're useful in everyday life. So I wanted to run down how I got this story. This story dates back to technically May of 2020, when Mother Jones posted an article titled Rudy Giuliani is looking for $10 million to finance a Ukraine Biden film. In the article, they lay out a ton of details about this plan by Rudy Giuliani to make a documentary about the Bidens in Ukraine. Just trying to sum up the article quickly. The authors of the article never really say what the documentary company does, but they did have the name of the company, which was Seaview Media LLC. So that's what I learned from that article. And so I put my super duper Google search skills to the test. So I knew that Seaview Media was something that I wanted to look into. It was connected to Giuliani, obviously, but also the article said that they were potentially looking for foreign funding for this film that was designed to kind of trying to sway the election. So there's a lot of intrigue around this company, so I wanted to research it, right? So I went to Google. I'm assuming most people would probably just type in the name of the company, Seaview Media. There's a more kind of refined way to do it, and that is if you put quotation marks around your search term, in this case, Seaview Media, it will limit the results to just that phrase. It's specific to that phrase. So instead of getting something about the view of the sea and a separate media company, you can only find that phrase, Seaview Media. So that'll narrow it down a ton. For me as a journalist, I kind of go way too far with it, and I'll search like other kind of search engines. I'll go through Tor next, usually, to see what's kind of on the other half of the web. I'll run that same quotation search and then stipulate that I want to see only files that have been uploaded to Google. So quote Seaview Media, end quote, and then file type PDF, for example. That'll show you all the PDFs on Google that have the phrase Seaview Media. And then I'll usually run it through Yandex, which is Russia's premier search engine, because they have different algorithms and different things pop up. That's usually if I'm only just doing a Russia focus story, which I often find myself doing that a lot. So that's kind of how I do it. When I plugged in Seaview Media with quotation marks, there was a hit for a website that they had made with very little traffic, and it was kind of still under development. The website looks crappy and not much to it. But what I found interesting is that Seaview Media, the Rudy Giuliani allied company, they were selling things on their website. And I had found this maybe at the end of 2020. They were selling like a hat, Seaview Media merch, essentially a hat. I forget what the other thing was, a t-shirt maybe, or a jacket. And the third thing was a pay-per-view interview with a Ukrainian prosecutor named Kostyan Kulik. And so that kind of raised my eye. I was like, what is this? Why are you selling an interview with a Ukrainian guy for a dollar? So I bought it. I just bought it through PayPal. And that's kind of where the next phase of the story takes off. I never got my product. I did not get the video interview with the Ukrainian prosecutor that I bought, which just told me that the company wasn't really doing anything at that time and probably had already folded. But I did get a receipt via email for the PayPal account associated with Seaview Media. And so I got that receipt sent to me because I had purchased the interview, the pay-per-view interview that they had on their website. And what I did was I looked at the details of the receipt that they sent me. I kind of went over it with a fine-tooth comb and expanded what the actual email address sender was, and that's kind of how I weaseled my way into really landing this story. The email address that was associated with Seaview Media's PayPal account, because I had purchased some content on their website, I transacted with PayPal. The receipt from PayPal had this email address on it, and I emailed that person because I had done my Google search with his email address, and it popped up, and I found him on Twitter, and he seemed, let's just say, not in line with Rudy Giuliani's politics at all. So I found that odd, and I was like, you know what, it's a Hail Mary, but I will just send an email to this guy from my PayPal receipt for this to see if he might respond. So I sent him like a pretty generic email. Hey, I'm a journalist. I'm looking into Seaview Media. I saw that your email address was attached to their PayPal account. You know, I'd love to chat on the phone or whatever, however I worded it. But to my surprise, I got an email back pretty quickly. And the person who owns that email, Matthew Galvin, he's in the story as one of our, I think the only on the record source from Seaview Media. So that chance email that I sent really helped, and that this story really wouldn't have been possible at all unless I did all those little kind of open source steps along the way to try to dig out some gold, and this time it worked. So yeah, those are some of the tips and tricks that I think someone reading a journalist's work might be interested in to better understand how a story's come to be. And you know, this, I'd say this kind of experience is abnormal. It's usually a little bit less hurdles to jump through to get some things. But once again, just like the common sense thing of shoot an email off, you know, what's the worst thing that could happen? And for me, I landed a really good article because of that. And I think it's a good sort of life lesson to start your week. That person that I mentioned, Matthew Galvin, who had the email address connected to Seaview, he was the one who supplied Forensic News with all of the videos in the article and obviously his firsthand accounts of what went on at Seaview Media. So again, this article does not happen at all without Matthew Galvin, and we thank him a lot for A, giving us the information, and B, allowing us to use his name. These are obviously powerful people, so you know, it's courageous anytime that somebody wants to stand by what they say with their actual name. So let's get into all of the new things that Forensic News is reporting in this article. The article is titled "Inside a Rudy Giuliani Operation to Smear Joe and Hunter Biden." This is about Seaview Media and the company that I just talked about, finding their email and getting to that source, Matthew Galvin, was super important, and you'll see where it ties in the article. I'm not going to read this thing word for word in every paragraph here, but I do want to kind of break it down into a few different sections and further expand on what we reported. So the first section of the article is kind of about the main people involved in CVU Media. So apart from Rudy Giuliani, you have a man named George Dixon III and Tim Yale. These are two kind of Republican businessmen slash entrepreneurs slash fundraisers for the GOP. So Tim Yale has a background in super PACs, for example, and George Dixon, he is more of an entrepreneur himself. He has his own cannabis business. He has affiliate ads marketing businesses, so he's all over the place, but they do often connect in Republican politics. So when I say CVU Media, it essentially refers to those three people. It's Giuliani, it's George Dixon III, and it's Tim Yale. You can essentially just think of those last two names as GOP fundraisers slash businessmen. So throughout 2020, Giuliani, Dixon, Yale, and a small group of other Republican operatives worked on and off on a documentary that they named Windfall about alleged wrongdoing by the Bidens in Ukraine, aka propaganda. Forensic News received exclusive access to multiple video clips allegedly produced by CVU Media. The videos, supplemented by a review of internal CVU Media communications and discussions with a source directly involved, that's Matthew Galvin, present the most complete picture of Giuliani's efforts to work with Ukrainian sources to produce the documentary. So who were those Ukrainian sources that Giuliani was working with to try to smear the Bidens? That's a great question. And we have an answer, and we have the answer in video proof. As I mentioned before, CVU Media was selling for $1 an interview with Konstantin Kulik. It's a mouthful, but it's important to know his name because he's the central figure in this story here. The video that Kulik provided, I guess is the right word, to CVU Media is just him. There's a scene of him kind of walking around the city in Kyiv, Ukraine, and then the 80% of it is him sitting at a desk speaking in Ukrainian, talking about with English subtitles, talking about how Burisma, where Hunter Biden worked, is corrupt, and you know Joe Biden fired the prosecutor because he didn't want him looking into Hunter. The same kind of conspiracy theories that you hear, that you heard during the election, right? But the interesting part here is that this is not a U.S. citizen opining on his candidates that he has to choose from. This is a foreigner working with U.S. people, think Giuliani, Yale, and Dixon, to try to influence an election. And there are very strict laws against and around that, and I'll discuss them a little bit more later. But that really puts Giuliani in a pickle here. Kulik providing any assistance to Giuliani, or the other way around, monetarily, is going to be something that the FBI really starts to dig into. Kulik ends his video that he provided to CVU Media, or was recorded by CVU Media, to be explained, but he ends the video by mentioning a letter and kind of a packet of documents that he sent to Senator Ron Johnson that detailed his kind of wild goose chase claims about the Bidens accepting cash, accepting bribes, you know, corruption in Ukraine with Hunter and Joe Biden. So he sent that packet of information to Ron Johnson, who was at the time running that investigation for Homeland Security in the Senate. And so Ron Johnson accepted that packet of information. We had written about that way back when. We had no idea that there was a Seaview Media connection back then. But we wrote about that letter basically saying Ron Johnson is accepting a packet of information that is extremely dubious on its face, but also you have to put it into context. Kulik, by that time, and we're talking October of 2020, days before the election, a few weeks before the election, Kulik mails that to Johnson. But at the same time, he's working with and literally the right-hand man of some of these press conferences, Andriy Derkach. But Derkach had already been sanctioned by the United States government, by the Treasury Department, in September for being, and this is an actual quote, an active Russian agent for over a decade, maintaining close connections with the Russian intelligence services, end quote. That's Andriy Derkach. And Giuliani met with him by itself. But now that Derkach is sanctioned in September for interfering in this election by the main method that he was doing was releasing audio that he had, and nobody's really figured out how he got this audio, and or if all of it's real. One of the Intel reports said it was edited, but it was purportedly audio of Joe Biden, then vice president, speaking with Ukraine's president, then president, Petro Poroshenko. So somehow Derkach got his hands on these tapes, and he said, you know, these tapes are further evidence of corruption by Joe Biden trying to pick the prosecutor involved in taking down Burisma, which never happened, and it's all predicated on a lie to believe that story. So that's Derkach. And at every single press conference where Derkach releases these audio tape recordings of Joe Biden mainly speaking with Poroshenko, but there's other conversations, high-level Ukrainian talks, etc. And at every conference, to Derkach's right is Konstantin Kulik, the main character here. So Kulik is Derkach's right-hand man, literally and figuratively. He's pushing the same narrative. He's with him at these press conferences. He is essentially an extension of Andriy Derkach, the active Russian agent for over a decade, maintaining close connections with the Russian intelligence services. So that's what the Treasury says in September. That's who Derkach is. And what do you know? 4 weeks later, maybe 4 weeks later, Seaview Media is working with Derkach's sidekick, Kulik. And they're making this propaganda video, perhaps because Derkach has been popped already. Kulik's name was not in that original package of sanctions, though he was added to the sanctions in January after Trump had already lost. But at that time, Kulik's name was not attached to Derkach's spying directly. Obviously, they were seen together in public, they were at the press conferences, all that, but Treasury did not mess with Kulik back then. So is it a coincidence that Derkach gets popped by the U.S. government and everyone knows he's a spy now, and all of a sudden Giuliani and Seaview related people stop their contact with Derkach? And oh, by the way, here's Kulik, who Giuliani hasn't seen in almost a year. So it seems interesting to me that I'm sure that's an angle that FBI investigators and prosecutors are going to look at. What was Derkach's involvement here? Because certainly his very close associate was involved here and filmed a video, again, for the purpose of trying to sway voters' opinions in the 2020 election. And this is a foreign politician. This is a foreign prosecutor that Rudy Giuliani has decided to work with. And I just wanted to make sure that I mentioned that here. So like I said, I spoke to Anna Masoglia, who is a researcher at the Center for Responsive Politics, and she's an expert on the Foreign Agent Registration Act, which is better known as FARA. And this is kind of the main potential crime that prosecutors and FBI agents in New York are investigating if Giuliani broke these laws. This is the main crime that apparently that they're looking into. So I asked Anna about this, about the documentary and how it might fit into a potential FARA charge. People say FARA. I say FARA. I don't know. Don't know what it is. But a potential FARA charge, according to Anna, and here's her quote, the most clean-cut case would be if there's evidence of direction or control of a foreign principal. So that would be Kulik, the foreign principal in this matter. Direction or control of a foreign principal. But a foreign agent doesn't necessarily need to be controlled and directed by a foreign principal for their relationship to fall under FARA. A foreign agent activities may also fall under FARA if they are acting at the request of a foreign principal. So the language is pretty broad. Like, if you're doing shit in the U.S., that politically benefits a foreign government, you should probably register. I feel like that's a basic rule that everyone can follow. It's quite broad. Like Anna said, if you're acting at the request of a foreign principal and you're doing something lobbying wise, you got to register. So that would be the most clear cut case in Anna's mind, is if they could say that Kulik or another foreign principal had a request approved or conducted by their agent, in this case, Giuliani and the Seaview media team. I'd encourage everyone to go to our website and check out the interview with Kulik and the other kind of media reel clips that we got from Seaview Media, not because they're anything special, they're not true, but it's an interesting insight into, what were the things that Kulik was so passionate about that he thought this was a good idea? Like, what issues did he want to push on these Americans? So watching it kind of from that lens and trying to understand the motivations of this person, Kulik, in spreading all these false claims about the Bidens and Democrats in Ukraine. And then kind of the other side of that coin is, what is he getting out of it? Did he just think it was going to be seen by a lot of people and so that would be good for him? Or, as I've had it suggested to me, people like that don't operate without being paid. Right? Like, his time is valuable in the way that they try and promote their message. So I think there's an interesting side angle here, and that's like, did anyone pay Kulik to sit down and do this interview? Were there flights out to Ukraine specifically to film him? All of these little expenses become much more important when you're commingling foreign politicians, U.S.-based, Republican insiders, and money changing hands. Like, there's so many different crimes that could potentially come out of that conglomerate of things. So not only is it the morally right thing to do when a foreign government official, foreign prosecutor, foreign whoever wants to mess with our election and either help one side or just cause some chaos, it should be incumbent on you to say, we don't deal with that. But that's not Rudy Giuliani's moral compass. And, he decided to work with whoever he thought would spread the message about the Bidens that he wanted to hear and that Trump wanted to hear. And so, like I said, when money starts moving around here, people are going to start asking questions. And, it started with the dramatic raid on Giuliani's office and Giuliani's house. And then, of course, with the, I believe it was a follow-up raid, or it might have been the same day, of Victoria Tensing, who is a lawyer that signed a bunch of deals with these Ukrainians, deals that are look sketchy, to say the least, on the surface. She got paid a ton of money, and then John Solomon at the Hill essentially wrote a ton of propaganda pieces. So that's a side thing. But just the point on money is that any sort of travel expenses, any video equipment expenses here, makes it important to makes it legally important for prosecutors to prove that anything was really going on here if they want to start looking at something like a conspiracy case to solicit help from a foreigner for an election, for an example. There are only three people that appear in the approximately, let's see, I'm doing head math, approximately 18 minutes of film that we received from Matthew Galvin at Seaview Media. There's only three people that appear on film during those 18 minutes or so. And it's Rudy Giuliani, of course. He's talking about how disgusting it is that Americans worked with Ukrainians in 2016 to try to get Hillary elected. That's a very, very sort of fringe Paul Manafort directed lie that that Ukraine was colluding with Hillary in 2016. It's such garbage. But anyway, Rudy is on video talking about that. He's talking about the corruption in Ukraine and all that. The other person, of course, is Kulik, the Ukrainian prosecutor, who is named in the Rudy Giuliani search warrant documents. So they're obviously looking at him very closely, and I'll sum up more about where we are in the FBI investigations later. But he, Kulik is the second person on film. And the last one is a man named Yuri Vanatik. And I've known about Vanatik for a while. I think I wrote about him, geez, it must be 3.5 years ago now. He caught my eye as a foreign agent for a couple of different Ukrainian politicians, and he was parading them around Congress, getting meetings with congressmen to lobby whatever the foreign politician, whatever his issue is. And so I had written a piece way back when about one of the Ukrainian politicians that he signed up to lobby for, and how had a very checkered past. There was, connections to Russia that weren't fully fleshed out, potential money laundering problems and financial crime. So I knew about Vanatik as kind of a lower level lobbying expert in Ukraine. There's a picture of him that pops up on Twitter every now and again of Paul Manafort when he, before he got arrested for multiple crimes, he handed over some sort of document packet to Vanatik at a dinner that I believe Vanatik posted on one of his social media platforms. And so there's a relationship with Manafort there. Vanatik also worked for Congressman Rohrabacher, who I'm sure 90% of you know is one of the Kremlin's kind of favorite congressmen when he was in Congress, because he just always towed the line. There's more of a story to be told there, by the way. Like, it's just nobody's really fleshed out the full Rohrabacher Russia thing, but that's for another day. Vanatik is also a bundler. He bundles people's donations together to make bigger donations. This is a rich person thing that we plebs don't get to partake in. But he's what's called a bundler, so a ton of people who have a lot of money will get together, and he'll bundle all the donations together and then send a $250,000 check to the Republican Party in Florida, or whatever it might be. So that's his background. He's a GOP financier. He was born in Soviet Union. And not much else about him is known. He's kind of this mysterious guy that nobody knows or wants to talk too much about. But he is in the Seaview Media footage that we have, and he speaks about he thinks that Ukraine is the most corrupt country in the world, which that's just obvious hyperbole, but compared to what us they say, then that's fine. Vanatik also speaks about former President Yanukovych in Ukraine, who some of you may know is very pro-Kremlin, all kinds of rumors of what the assistance there was to Yanukovych. But it's clear now that he was in Putin's pocket while he was the leader of Ukraine. And Vanatic says in the video, you know, there's a story out there that Yanukovych wasn't as bad as the guy that followed him, which is Poroshenko, the guy on tape talking to Biden. So it's just one big story of Vanatek trying to excuse Yanukovych, which I thought was hilarious, in order to advance his agenda. So Vanatek is the other guy that pops up with CVU Media. McClatchy describes him as a master of selfies, because if you look at his social media, it's selfie after selfie with the thumbs up with every GOP politician you can think of. Let's get into a little bit of what Matthew Galvin told us about what happened with CVU Media all throughout 2020. So he said that by the summer time, in the springtime and late winter in 2020, the Dixon, Yale, Giuliani crew were talking about CVU being kind of like a big media empire, taking on big outlets and whatnot, and Rudy was gonna have a live show, and so they were talking grander. But around the time summer rolled around, they decided that they wanted to do a single project instead of create a whole media franchise. They wanted to just do the one documentary on the Bidens and alleged corruption, and they're going to cascade through apparent whistleblowers and witnesses that are sure to be some flaws in their backgrounds. But by the summer, that was the focus. They were going to make one documentary. They were going to try and, you know, sway voters away from Joe Biden to maybe sit the race out or vote for Trump. And they were going to do that by trying to say that Joe Biden is corrupt in Ukraine. By the summer, so that's where they are in the summer. That time is when George Dixon paid some people involved in the project. So Galvin told us that George paid some people in May, late May, and that's when the focus shifted to the single documentary on Ukraine and the Bidens. The whole thing was about Joe Biden and corruption, and George Dixon thought that they were going to have a huge audience. And that's around the time I was introduced to John Ryan. So this is one of those times where I don't normally like to throw in names that might not be that important, because it's a lot of things to remember for a listener, but I think I'm going to have to break that rule here, because this guy John Ryan is very interesting, and you know, there's a huge question mark around this person. John Ryan allegedly was connected to OAN, One America News, where he knew Chanel Ryan, or Rion, don't know how you pronounce that, who is one of the lead, I don't know what you call her, I'm not calling her a journalist, lead person on TV, newscaster at OAN. But the source, Matthew Galvin, was only given John's phone number and said that they were to stay in touch. Matthew and John would be feeding Matthew content produced by CVU Media, and then Matthew's job was to upload it to various places. They had a Roku store, so upload it to there and present it on the website in some cases. But John Ryan was an interesting character for Matthew, because he said they had one phone call together, and John Ryan is supposed to be this producer type that lives in Southern California, and this is according to George Dixon, so essentially our source, Matthew's boss, right? And so, yeah, John Ryan is this producer. He knows all about film. He's made films in Asia. This is what they're telling Matthew. And Matthew has a call with John Ryan, and he hung up and later told me that the man on the other side of the phone did not understand pretty basic film terminology. He said he didn't know like basic film words. So he left that phone call thinking like, this is a non-project here. This is not going to get off the ground if these are the people that are involved. But nonetheless, they continued to stay in touch via either text messages or phone calls. And then the laptop hit. The Hunter Biden laptop was first exposed in the New York Post in October of 2020. That's when Seaview Media, according to Galvin, began hurried work to include the information from the laptop in the documentary. They said, "We have the hard drives," Galvin told us. So basically, Rudy said he had Hunter Biden's laptop. I think even to this day, nobody knows if it actually was his. There was a lot of convincing stuff on there. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt and say it was his. But who knows? I haven't set my mind on that at all. But Giuliani was saying he had the laptop. And inside Seaview Media, the consensus was they had to get materials from the laptop. Hunter Biden's text messages, his emails, his pictures of him smoking crack, all that stuff. They wanted to get that media ready for the documentary, the big documentary at Seaview Media. Soon after that, John Ryan sent Galvin a few additional clips of the media reels, including the 10-minute recording of Kulik's interview, the Ukrainian prosecutor. That's when that was sent around October of 2020. By the time the election arrived, Seaview Media did not have a full movie made. John Ryan stopped replying one day out of the blue to Galvin, and the project went dark, and not much has been made of it since, except for Scrutiny. So Scrutiny has certainly followed this project, and we'll get into a couple of different areas in the law where he might, Giuliani being he might face some potential problems. I spoke to an expert on the Foreign Agent Registration Act, and she gave me some really good opinions on that and some other potential topics where she sees that Giuliani might be in trouble here. And so let's get into that. Let's get into a little bit of what Matthew Galvin told us about what happened with Seaview Media all throughout 2020. So he said that by the summer time, in the springtime and late winter in 2020, the Dixon, Yale, Giuliani crew were talking about Seaview being kind of like a big media empire, taking on big outlets and whatnot, and Rudy was going to have a live show, and so they were talking grander. But around the time summer rolled around, they decided that they wanted to do a single project instead of create a whole media franchise. They wanted to just do the one documentary on the Bidens and alleged corruption, and they're going to cascade through apparent whistleblowers and witnesses that are sure to be some flaws in their backgrounds. But by the summer, that was the focus. They were going to make one documentary. They were going to try and, you know, sway voters away from Joe Biden to maybe sit the race out or vote for Trump. And they were going to do that by trying to say that Joe Biden is corrupt in Ukraine. By the summer, so that's where they are in the summer. That time is when George Dixon paid some people involved in the project. So Galvin told us that George paid some people in May, late May, and that's when the focus shifted to the single documentary on Ukraine and the Bidens. The whole thing was about Joe Biden and corruption, and George Dixon thought that they were going to have a huge audience. And that's around the time I was introduced to John Ryan. So this is one of those times where I don't normally like to throw in names that might not be that important, because it's a lot of things to remember for a listener, but I think I'm going to have to break that rule here, because this guy, John Ryan, is very interesting, and you know, there's a huge question mark around this person. John Ryan allegedly was connected to OAN, One America News, where he knew Chanel Ryan, or Rion, don't know how you pronounce that, who is one of the lead, I don't know what you call her, I'm not calling her a journalist, lead person on TV, newscaster at OAN. But the source, Matthew Galvin, was only given John's phone number and said that they were to stay in touch. Matthew and John would be feeding Matthew content produced by Seaview Media. And then Matthew's job was to upload it to various places. They had a Roku store, so upload it to there and present it on the website in some cases. But John Ryan was an interesting character for Matthew, because he said they had one phone call together, and John Ryan is supposed to be this producer type that lives in Southern California, and this is according to George Dixon, so essentially our source, Matthew's boss, right? And so, yeah, John Ryan is this producer. He knows all about film. He's made films in Asia. This is what they're telling Matthew. And Matthew has a call with John Ryan, and he hung up and later told me that the man on the other side of the phone did not understand pretty basic film terminology. He said he didn't know like basic film words, so he left that phone call thinking like, this is a non-project here. This is not going to get off the ground if these are the people that are involved. But nonetheless, you know, they continued to stay in touch via either text messages or phone calls, and then the laptop hit. The Hunter Biden laptop was first exposed in the New York Post in October of 2020. That's when Seaview Media, according to Galvin, began hurried work to include the information from the laptop in the documentary. They said, "We have the hard drives," Galvin told us. So basically, Rudy said he had Hunter Biden's laptop. I think even to this day, nobody knows if it actually was his. There was a lot of convincing stuff on there. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt and say it was his. But who knows? I haven't set my mind on that at all. But Giuliani was saying he had the laptop. And inside Seaview Media, the consensus was they had to get materials from the laptop. You know, Hunter Biden's text messages, his emails, his pictures of him smoking crack, all that stuff. They wanted to get that media ready for the documentary, the big documentary at Seaview Media. Soon after that, John Ryan sent Galvin a few additional clips of the media reels, including the 10-minute recording of Kulik's interview, the Ukrainian prosecutor. That's when that was sent around October of 2020. By the time the election arrived, Seaview Media did not have a full movie made. John Ryan stopped replying one day out of the blue to Galvin, and the project went dark, and not much has been made of it since, except for Scrutiny. So Scrutiny has certainly followed this project, and we'll get into a couple of different areas in the law where he might Giuliani being he might face some potential problems. I spoke to an expert on the Foreign Agent Registration Act, and she gave me some really good opinions on that and some other potential topics. But before we do that, I just wanted to make one last point on the John Ryan character. And speaking with Matthew, this is something that came up multiple times, so I wanted to make sure to expand on this. So the process that they had was that John Ryan would send Matthew the video clips and the web content to put up publicly. And John Ryan received them presumably from somewhere. And that's the main question that Matthew had living this life. You know, he lived through this for a year plus. This was his life. The big question he had was, where did the original footage of these people come from? He speculated that it could be from one of the OAN trips to Ukraine. But again, with a Kulik video, he's talking about a letter that he sent to Ron Johnson in October of 20. So the video for Kulik, at least, has to have been recorded after that date, because he's talking about something that he did. So the chain of command is something that Matthew really stressed to me. Was never clear to him. It was never clear where this media was coming from, who was filming it, who was directing it, who was the lights guy, you know, all that kind of stuff. That was never answered, and nor was the intrigue around John Ryan. I looked hard for this man. I'm usually pretty good at digging up people and figuring out who they are. The best I could get was John Ryan, who ran a media company in LA, which ticked all the boxes, but the company's dead and there's no sort of contact information. So, you know, I've heard a lot of rumors and speculation about who this dude could be. You know, obviously the Michael Caputo documentary was co-produced by two Russian spies, so nothing's out of the question, I should say. The mystery of John Ryan was never solved, and the mystery of who had the original content of these Ukrainian people and who was producing it, that was also never solved. So those are the two big question marks that Matthew had at the end of his experience working with these people. But even with the sort of broad parameters of FARA, it might not be the best sort of scenario to apply FARA. If this were the case, then you would have to prove that most likely Kulik was somehow directing this CVU operation or this documentary work, or he was about to use it for some sort of lobbying purpose. That seems, based on the knowledge we have right now, a little bit far-fetched. Based on what I know, I see CVU Media as a Giuliani-centric operation. I don't see that he's being controlled or anything like that by Kulik. But again, I don't have insight into his finances. I don't have insight into his phone records and all that kind of stuff. But I spoke with Anna Masoglia, and she suggested that the crime that probably better fits this scenario is 52 U.S. Code 30121, which makes it illegal to use foreign funds to influence U.S. elections or solicit anything of value from foreign nationals in connection with an election. Anna told us the bigger issue would be if the project was intended to influence the outcome of the election and Giuliani sought funding from a foreign national. We know, based on talking with Galvin, that the first point there is absolutely ticked. This was totally intended to influence the election. They wanted to swing voters with this. They wanted to show Joe Biden's corruption and reach independent voters, apparently. So that's for sure. And the second thing, if Giuliani sought foreign funding, then this crime would potentially be applied to him. There was some reporting in Mother Jones that they were looking for foreign investors. I don't have any sort of exclusive information on that front, but I do think it's interesting that they were allegedly open to getting funding from foreign nationals. But based on what I know, I don't think a big check ever came in. I do think, obviously, George paid some people, like Matthew said, in May. I don't think that big money ever came in. Maybe it did, and I don't know about it yet, but, I don't think that happened. But the thing of value element is really tough, because there have been examples of documentaries being proven as things of value. Even things like paintings are things of value. So certainly 10 minutes in a blockbuster documentary would be a thing of value. And, you know, that's something that would keep me up at night if I were Rudy Giuliani. So now that we know all of that new information, I wanted to take a step back and look at where we stand with these investigations into Giuliani and into his partners and his friends and business associates. So, as I'm sure everyone knows here, Giuliani was raided. His house and his office were raided in April of 2021, along with Victoria Tensing, another lawyer involved in the situation. And that probe is very active. We can now report that in recent months, those investigators in New York, Southern District of New York investigators, they've taken a keen interest in Kulik. And we think, read between the lines in the article, we think this is why. We really think that the FBI is interested in Kulik because of his involvement with this documentary. The only other known instance we have of Kulik meeting Giuliani or participating in anything like that, he had a meeting with him in December 2019. That's the last known date that those two people, Giuliani and Kulik, ever met. Until now, when we have this footage of Kulik for a Giuliani company, 4 weeks before the election. So that's kind of the TikTok timeline on that. The investigators now are interested in Kulik. And here's what we were told. Just to round that out, I should say, the investigators, according to two people that we spoke with, they want to know more about any potential covert meetings between Giuliani, someone on Giuliani's team, and Kulik, or anyone in his inner circle. So that's kind of what the FBI is looking into right now. Were there any other contacts between Kulik and Giuliani? When did those happen? And how the heck did he pop back up for this documentary that was supposed to be made by Giuliani's company? The other thing that we got, and this is on the record, this is a great part of this piece that really rounds it out in terms of where we stand with these investigations. We spoke with Ken McCallion, and Ken is a longtime lawyer in the D.C. area, and he represents and has represented multiple Ukrainian clients in the past 5 years or so. Some of his clients are businessmen and people like that, but others are certainly government associated people. And some of them are even involved in this specific probe, in the Giuliani probe. So we spoke with him. He's representing those people, like I said, mostly Ukrainians. And he confirmed to us that Kulik, he said, is now at the heart of the probe. I can confirm that SDNY prosecutors have been investigating Kulik's involvement with Giuliani and asking questions of various witnesses about that association. McCallion also told us a really important fact here that certainly raised all of our eyebrows and will lend credence to a theory that I'll kind of pose at the end here. But McCallion told us that the prosecutors in New York are working really hard to build their case against Giuliani, and they're pulling out kind of all the stops. According to McCallion, he said that the prosecutors have been seeking to flip various Ukrainian figures against Giuliani. And remember, a lot of these figures that Giuliani spoke with, had meetings with, are now sanctioned in the U.S. They can't do business here. They can't travel here. So there's some shit on the line for these Ukrainians. And I'm thinking of people like Kulik, and that's somebody that McCallion mentioned, obviously. But there's Kulik, there's Derkash, there's Telezhenko. I'm sure I'm forgetting a few. Andriy Artemenko is already under FBI investigation. But there's plenty of figures in Ukraine that Giuliani certainly did not shy away from working with in 2020. And now, according to McCallion, that might come back to bite him if one of these guys wants to flip and maybe get his sanctions lifted or something like that. So that's another thing that will keep Rudy and his legal team on edge for sure. And rounding it out, McCallion said there are other witnesses that I have also represented who have cooperated, but they don't want their identities released. I can, however, also confirm that SDNY is trying to get the cooperation of Kulik against Giuliani. And here's the key part of this, the kicker, if you will. And the Ukrainian government has cooperated with those efforts. I don't know whether a deal has been reached with Kulik or not. So there's kind of headline number three in this story. SDNY investigators and prosecutors are trying to get Rudy's ally, Kulik, to flip on Rudy, to produce some evidence that they think he has to incriminate Rudy. And the Ukrainian government itself is cooperating with those efforts. So that's kind of the big takeaway from the end of this story. We tried to reach out to all of these people, FBI, Yale, Dixon, Giuliani, they didn't reply, and we couldn't find any good contact info for Kulik, so he could not be reached. Thank you for listening. I want to give one more final reminder to encourage you to support our work. There's a few different ways that you can do so. Patreon.com/forensicnews is the quickest way to do it and probably the most convenient way. Patreon is a subscription site, so you can choose either, you know, we have various tiers starting at $5 a month or $50 a year. If you want to just make a one-time payment, which I know a lot of people prefer, you can go to our website and then click the Support Our Work link on the menu. That'll give you a few different options of one-time payments. We have PayPal up there. We have Stripe donations. Just enter your credit card. We also have our merchandise if you want to buy a hat or a sweatshirt. So those are the main ways you can support us. If you can't support financially, obviously we understand that, and your readership means a lot more to us than I think you guys understand. So thank you for staying along for the ride.
This is Xavier, editor of the Forensic News Podcast, hosted by Scott Stedman. Make sure to subscribe to Forensic News on Patreon and follow us on Twitter at Forensic News Net and Forensic News Pod. Thank you for listening. Until next time.